the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the wealth advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, here we go again. Another hour cranking it up. The money advice right here on Bucket Strategy Investing. We got more of the best in money strategies and money information just ahead, as we always do. Professor Rick Plum, our main brain trust advisor, here with me, Johnny Dean, again from Lucia Capital Group. We got topics, got phone calls, we got emails, whatever, anything that's on your mind, it's all coming up and we're going to be talking about it. So if you want to take part in the discussion, you got a money question of any kind, doesn't matter, you call us right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We're going to say it again, 877-752-6637. That spells out PLANNER. If you want to add to the stack of emails that we'll be reading on the show this hour, easy to do that as well. You just go over to wealthed.com, you click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. We'll get it right here in the studio. Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner. He's back with me once again from Lucia Capital Group. We do try on this show as best we can to deliver to you the strategies that are right for you, trying to help you get through retirement. Not just through retirement, but get you to retirement as well. If you need to talk to an advisor off the air, any one of the Brain Trust advisors that are there nationwide through Lucia Capital Group, you can always call Professor Plum or anyone there at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. That's the number there, 800-644-1150. You can talk off the air. Find out if your individual retirement goals and needs are being met. They may not be, all right? Your situation is unique to you, and the Brain Trust is going to help you with your own plan. They've got access to the network of Brain Trust advisors all across the country. So you can call them or you can call us right here on the program. Our Brain Trust, Professor Plum, is here to help you out as well. On the air, 800, I'm sorry, off the air, 800-644-1150. On the air, talk to us now. We got lines open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. So I don't know, Professor Plum, I don't know if it's a little early for people to be thinking about this or not. I know some people, though, one of the things that we talked about toward the end of last year was doing a Roth conversion, thinking about perhaps taking some of the money out of a traditional IRA and converting it into a Roth IRA. Now, any number of reasons why you might want to do that.
Well, they were looking at, you know, trying to take advantage of the tax brackets they were in. But no matter what tax bracket you're in, if the value of the conversion, the principal that you converted across, has gone down, we don't like paying taxes on value we don't even have anymore. And so a lot of people will be looking to potentially undo it. And you do, if it was an IRA conversion, IRA to Roth IRA conversion, you do have time to undo it. So if you converted $10,000 in, you know, November and it's now worth $8,000 or whatever the number is, and you're saying, why would I want to pay taxes on that $2,000 of value that I no longer have? Well, you don't have to. You can undo it. Maybe. And so you have to contact your IRA custodian and say, how do we go about undoing this?
So the main reason for undoing, I would think, any type of Roth conversion would be because you don't want to pay these taxes on this income or on this value that you don't have anymore.
There's two reasons to undo a Roth conversion. One of them is what's hitting people right now, and the fact that the market has gone down in the last couple of weeks of December. The market has gone down, and maybe you did it earlier in 2015. You're saying, I don't want to pay tax on money that's gone down in value. The other reason is you've done your tax return, which nobody's done yet for 2015, and you look at it and say, holy cow, I don't want to pay that much in taxes. And you realize that a large portion of the taxes that you owe came from the conversion that you did, so you can undo it at that time. Right now, what we're seeing are people calling and saying, you know, it's gone down in value. Do I really want to pay taxes on that at this point? And so you have the ability to undo, what they call recharacterize the conversion. Make it as if it never happened. You don't have to undo the whole thing. You can undo portions, but it is a pro rata push back to the other side.
Okay, so what is the time horizon for undoing a Roth conversion? You've decided you don't want to pay taxes for whatever reason. You made a mistake. Doesn't matter. You want to undo it. What's the time horizon here?
Well, you're not under any, you know, quick time constraints right now that you have to do it within the next couple of weeks. You have basically until October 15th, which is quite a while away, to undo it. The question is, when can you then redo the basically reconvert? And so that has to deal with, when can I reconvert an undone, a recharacterized conversion? And so I want the conversion, I want to undo it because it went down in value, but I want to reconvert it because it went down in value and now's a good time to do it. I want to pay tax on less of the conversion. So there are time horizons. You can't reconvert within a 30-day window period of time. So if I recharacterize today, I can't reconvert it for at least 30 days or until in the next tax year, depending upon which one comes first. So there are some rules about it, but you have up until October 15th, or I think October 15th this year. I know the April 15th is not April 15th this year.
Well, we're going to call it October 15th, give or take.
Don't wait until the last day.
No.
If you're going to undo it, figure it out and undo it, and then give yourself some time to redo it if you want to redo it. But if you did a conversion last year and you undo it now, and then you redo it in a couple of months, it's a 2016 conversion, the next one.
Okay, so let's talk about the scenario for undoing it. Let's say last year, I'm going to use easy numbers, you had $10,000. You converted $10,000 of a traditional IRA, and then you looked at it, and for whatever reason, it's down to $8,000.
Yeah, that's
too much.
20%, but
that's too much.
Oh no, there's things that are down that much right now.
Okay, yeah, you didn't have some good choices.
You took a high flyer and it didn't fly.
Right, okay, so you had $10,000. You look today. You did this back in December, and you look today and you say it's down to $8,000. I am going to have to pay taxes on the $10,000 value.
Yes.
Well, that doesn't appeal to me very much.
Right.
So you decide, okay, I'm going to undo it. Fairly easy to do.
If it's its own IRA, this is why a lot of people will do conversions into their own separate specific account.
Yeah.
You instruct your IRA, your Roth IRA custodian, to send it back to the traditional IRA. Take that $8,000 that used to be 10 in our example and just send it back. And it's as if it never happened. It's like that old show Soap, when the guy would just magically disappear in his mind. And it just didn't happen.
That's going back 40 years.
I love that show.
Billy Crystal was in that show. Okay. So you just tell the custodian, I want to undo it and pretend as if it never happened.
Right. Now, the problem comes if you've taken that $10,000 and let's say it was one stock, and you moved it into an existing Roth IRA, and that one stock that you converted went down a lot. Maybe it went down more than the 20% we're playing with hypothetically. But the rest of your Roth did okay. And so the Roth itself didn't lose very much money. Just this one investment lost money. They're going to look at the account. When I say they, I mean the IRS. And so you're not going to be able to undo just that one individual security if you've put it into another big account. That's why a lot of people will put it into its own conversion world until such time as the time horizons to undo it pass.
And that's probably a good idea, right?
It gives you a little flexibility. Because if you put it into the overall pie, now you're looking at a pro rata number. What was the value when it went in? What is the value now? Did the whole portfolio go down, or did just one individual stock and maybe some others went up? You may not have a loss to undo. Even though that one security that you thought was going to do so well didn't, you can't undo just the one if you put it into a bigger account. And so you do have to look into this a little bit ahead of time. And when you're doing things, if you think you're going to want to have a chance to undo it, set up a new Roth. I know it's more paperwork, and there's a lot of advisors out there going, but come on, Rick, don't tell them that. That's a whole nother account. That's a bunch of paperwork. And it is. And so you have to decide what's more important.
Yeah, and I guess... So that begs the question. Hang on, if you're on hold 1 second, I just got to finish this up here. What amount, when you undo a Roth conversion, what amount actually does get done undone? I think that's important to reiterate here.
Well, it's a matter of how.
That's all right.
The current equivalent of the account that was. It's hard. If it's all by itself, it's the value.
Yes.
But if it's gone into another account that has other assets, you have to look at how much the account has dropped, if at all, and you undo the valuation, the pro rata valuation. If I converted in the equivalent of 10% of my portfolio, I undo 10% of my portfolio. So you see where that works?
Yes. I mean, I understand where it is. It's difficult.
Not easy.
It's difficult to describe.
That's why they have forms.
Well, that's why they have forms, and that's why I would think, Professor Plum, as you just said, you would probably recommend that if you're going to do any type of Roth conversion, at least for the moment, you want to convert it into its own, make it a Roth conversion.
Distinct.
Yeah, a separate.
Its own little account off to the other world, because then you can just undo it.
Exactly. So, and now... We mentioned doing the conversion. You went from $10,000 to $8,000. I've undone it. Okay.
Now you're back to the traditional IRA.
The quick question is, when can I do this other? I'd still like to convert, but I'd like to convert it on now the $8,000 number.
You have to wait until the next tax year or 30 days. Now, the conversion happened in 2015, so we're into the next tax year. So that's already happened. So now we have to wait the 30 days. It's the longer of the two. Now, if I'm doing a conversion today and it drops and I undo it, I can't reconvert that same money until 2017.
Yes, because
the longer of the next tax year from the conversion or 30 days.
So is it better to do it early in the year or conversion, or is it better to do it late in the year? Or does it even matter?
There's different philosophies on that.
Okay, well then we don't have time to get into that. We will maybe later. All right, Mike and San Mateo, hold on 1 second. Just be a couple of minutes here. I know you have a Social Security question, so we're going to answer that question, give you enough time to ask it. So we'll bring you up when we come back. We still have a couple of lines open right now. Our phone number, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Still have one line open, I think, so get it now while you can. 877-PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, answering your money questions. Brain Trust standing by here on Bucket Strategy Investing. Once again, our phone number, 877-PLANNER. We still have a line open, I'm told. All right, Mike is up next in San Mateo. Mike, thank you for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Good morning. I am 62 years old. I'm collecting, I just qualified for Social Security disability, so I'm collecting about $2,400 a month. And my understanding is that when I'm 66, it would convert straight over to Social Security.
Yes.
But my question is, if I collect it till I'm 66 and opt not to have it convert over at 66, can I wait till I'm 70?
What do you mean not have it convert over? When you turn 66, the characterization of the benefit changes from a disability benefit to a retirement benefit. And then when you get to full retirement age, you're age 66, you are now receiving a retirement benefit. And you have all the rules and privileges of a retirement benefit, which means that if you wanted to, you could voluntarily suspend that retirement benefit and allow it to grow until age 70 with the delayed retirement credits of 8% a year to get a much bigger benefit at age 70 than you would otherwise get.
Okay, that really does answer it. So that's really what I wanted to know, because I know it converts over. I didn't know if I had to.
Yeah, there's no choice in the conversion. Now, the other is, will there be anybody else receiving a benefit from your work record, a spousal benefit, a child's benefit, anything like that?
No, my wife will receive her own.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about it because you don't have the file and suspend it capability to allow somebody else to continue, but you can suspend your benefit once it's a retirement benefit. And your full retirement age, you can still voluntarily suspend it and let it grow until 70.
Okay, so I'm getting the benefit of collecting it 4 years early and then suspending it for 4 years and then taking it at the later rate.
Right, because you're not receiving your retirement benefit right now, you're receiving a disability benefit. And the disability benefit is basically a retirement benefit without being reduced, even though you're taking it early.
Right, so I'm getting my 66 rate now, but... Okay, that's great. Awesome. Okay, that answers my question. Thank you for your help.
No problem.
Thank you. Thanks for the call, Mike.
No fun being disabled, but it's...
But you can get it, you know, much earlier than certainly full retirement age, and you're getting it up until the point that you would turn full retirement age.
Right.
Now, what he's asking to do is to suspend that benefit.
Right, and we didn't lose the ability to voluntarily suspend our benefit. All the new legislation that was passed last November didn't take away the ability to voluntarily suspend the benefit when we get to full retirement age. It just took the ability for us to suspend the benefit on our own right and allow somebody else to continue to receive a benefit from our work record. So what's happening is the file and suspend, if I suspend it, or if Fred were to suspend his benefit at full retirement age, or Mike, if Mike were to suspend his benefit at full retirement age, but his wife was receiving a spousal benefit from him, if he suspended it because he's not old enough, you know, to live under the old rules, it would suspend her benefit too. But he's not trying to do that. He's just trying to do it for himself and then create a bigger survivor benefit, which makes sense.
Yeah, the suspension of the benefits means currently, now, under the new rules, suspension of all benefits connected with that individual. Before, it was just suspending it for themselves.
My own, yes.
Anybody else could have still taken advantage of that. 877-PLANNER. We have time. Yes, we do. Fred up next in Whitehall, PA. Hello, Fred.
Hello. My question is rather simple for you folks.
Okay.
Early in 2015, I made a direct distribution from my IRA to a charity.
Okay.
And I understand that I have to consider that as my income for 2015.
Actually,
and
they
I'm wondering if that's going to change for 2016.
Well, actually, they changed it for 2015.
They did.
In late December, they extended what's the qualified charitable distribution rules and actually made them permanent. Well, as permanent as tax law can be. So there is no sunsetting. There's no date that this will no longer be allowed, at least in today's tax code. The distribution, so you said you took the money directly from your IRA and had it sent directly to a charity, right?
Correct.
So that is, and they reinstituted that law late in 2015, but it still means that any distribution that went directly from the IRA to the charity was a qualified charitable distribution, and it should not show up on your tax return. It's not it's not an income item. It's not a deduction. It just didn't happen for a tax purpose. And that rule is available in 2016 and beyond for as long as Congress leaves it alone.
Is there a timing thing for 2015?
No.
No, I did make it early in 2015.
That's okay.
Still do that.
That's fine. You had, as long as you didn't take possession of the money and then give the cash to the charity, as long as it went directly from the IRA to the charity, it's a qualified charitable distribution.
Right. I had to make the check out directly to the church.
Good.
Okay.
So your IRA custodian, when they create the 1099 that you're going to receive later this year, or in a couple of months, should show it as a qualified distribution. Maybe you want to call them and say, remember that distribution that went directly to the charity and they redid the rules? So you may want to just remind them, but they should do it automatically.
Yeah, okay. Hey, you guys have a great show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
Enjoy it greatly.
All right, well, take care of yourself, and thanks for calling. Call anytime. I guess we should mention this. We have a couple of times, but the qualified charitable distribution. Now, you mentioned the 1099. There's still going to be one issued.
Sure, but it'll show that it was a qualified charitable distribution, so the taxability would be zero. And it will.
But he needs to.
It's a code on the 1099.
But you're saying to remind the
Custodian should do it automatically.
But they may not. And if they don't, they may.
If you don't, then you're just going to deal with doing your tax return and say, that's why if you've ever bothered to look at a tax return on the IRA distribution line, there's two boxes. There's a box in the middle of the page that says, how much was distributed from your IRA. And then there's one on the right-hand column, which is the taxable column. And it says, well, how much of that was taxable? And you just put in zero if you don't have it coded correctly, because it's not a taxable event. And that doesn't increase your adjusted gross income. And it all comes out in the wash.
So what you're telling what you're saying is...
I'd rather have it not show up anywhere.
No, of course. Yeah, but if you have to put it on there. So on this form, though, it says how much is taxable, and you write zero. It's up to the IRS to determine whether or not it really is zero
If it's listed as a normal distribution, the IRS is going to look to see that it's in both boxes, or it's in at least the taxable box.
Yeah.
If it shows up as a qualified charitable distribution, the IRS won't look for it.
Right.
So depending upon the 1099 he receives, he may have to show it and then show that it's not taxable and then be ready to explain it if the IRS ever comes back at you.
Because they might come back and say, well, what do you mean it's not? They probably won't. I would assume not. But
they've got other fish to fry.
Yeah, I would assume so. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. We've got to take a quick break here. So hang on. Alan is next in Dallas, Texas. Stick around. Alan wants to know if he can retire right now. So we will tackle that question with Alan and anything else. I also have a couple of emails I want to get to here sometime before the top of the hour. We had one that we've been hanging on for just a little bit. Candace in Midlothian, Texas. It's also a retirement question and Social Security. So we'll get to that. Anything else that you want to talk about? We still have two lines open. So, hey, fill them up right now. 877-PLANNER. If you're on hold, don't go away. As I said, we're going to be taking calls when we come back. 877-752-6637. Any money question that you have, the Brain Trust is here to answer it for you. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, coming right back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Market Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. A lot of stuff still to come for the top of the hour. Get your questions in, your money questions. Do you have a line open still? We always have a line open. And we'll save it just for you. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. As promised, Alan is up next in Dallas, Texas with a question. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
Hi, how can we help you today?
I had an investment, a retirement question concerning, I'm 60 years old and
can I have you turn your radio down or TV in the background if you would? I think that's throwing us off there.
Yes, sir. I have an investment question concerning early retirement.
Okay.
And I don't have a family history of longevity. And I was trying to consider it would be to my benefit to retire early.
Okay. You said you were 60, 6-0?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so do you have any pensions or any other types of direct incomes?
No, sir, I don't. I just have 401k.
Okay. How much is in your 401k?
About $100,000.
Okay. And at 62, what is your Social Security going to look like?
At 62, I'm not sure.
Okay, these are kinds of things. How much will you need if you were to retire today, tomorrow, 62? How much will you need every month to be able to live?
About $2,000.
Okay, and so this is where Social Security is going to come in very strong. We need to know how much that Social Security is. If the Social Security is $1,000 a month, let's say you worked until 62, you picked up $1,000 a month from Social Security. That means your portfolio needs to provide $1,000 a month. That's $12,000 a year out of roughly $100,000. That's only going to last 8 to 10 years, but you said your longevity is not that good. On the other hand, if your Social Security is $1,500 a month at 62, your portfolio only needs to provide $6,000 a year, $500 a month, to give you that $2,000 that you need. And that means that you have a very high likelihood of being able to meet that for your expected lifetime. So the Social Security is going to be a very important issue on whether or not you will be able to retire anytime soon or not. How much do you make, and have you been working all your life?
Yes, I've been working since I'm 16, and I make about $6,000 a month.
$6,000 a month, $72,000 a year. Okay, well then your Social Security should be a pretty nice number, $1,500 a month. So it's very likely that you'll be able to do what you want to do, and you may be able to do it before you get to 62. But it's going to revolve around that Social Security number. Now, you're single or married?
Single.
Were you ever married at any time?
Yes, I'm divorced.
And how long were you married?
4 or 5 years.
Okay, so that's not going to work because we can't do any games there, nor would we really want to. So I think the first thing that you need to do, Alan, is go onto the Social Security website. And there's a box in the center lower portion of the center right lower portion of the website that says retirement estimator, benefit estimator. And go in there and do an estimate of what your benefit will be at age 62. And so that's going to, and then we can look at the portfolio whether or not it's reasonable or not. So I would say your first step, get that Social Security number, because if it's a reasonable number, like I think it will be, $1,500 or more, now we design the portfolio to give you the money you need and then the $500 a month after that. If unfortunately, for some reason, it's a very low number, well, we need to fix it and figure out why it's a low number, but it may mean that you have to work a little longer. So let's get that number first.
Okay, thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome, Alan. If you have any other questions, please hold on. Professor Plum, we'll talk to you more about it.
I think if he's been making $72,000 or the equivalent inflation reduced as time goes on, he's going to have a nice Social Security number, probably in that $1,500 a month range. And if he's getting $1,500 from Social Security, you know, if he needs $500 a month from his portfolio, that's $6,000 a year out of $100,000. And he said his longevity is not that great, so we don't have to worry about age 80, 90, you know, 100 years old.
Yeah.
So 6% distribution is okay.
That can work, yeah. I mean, people get wigged out when you go up to 6% sometimes, but it can work.
Right, but we may not need to make it last 30
That's
years.
That's the thing. If it doesn't have to last 30 years, you could even take more, I suppose. Hang on a second, George. Tom in Henderson has been hanging on for a little while. Hello, Tom. How can we help you today?
I had a question about Social Security. I'm 67, and I started taking my Social Security at 66. My wife just turned 65 in December, and I may be leaving my employment, so we want to get Medicare.
Okay.
So would it be wise for her to wait till she's 66 to get full retirement, or can she go on mine, knowing that she was a retired school teacher and that pension that she gets from the school district lessens her Social Security?
Right. It's going to lessen the benefit from you as well. Now, how much is her pension from being a teacher?
She gets $2,200 a month.
Okay, $2,200. And how much is your Social Security?
My Social Security is $2,400.
Okay. We don't have to worry about when she's going to get a benefit from you, because while you're on this earth, she's not going to get a benefit from you. So now it's a question of she can apply for it, but she's not going to get it, because the government pension offset is going to eliminate the spousal benefit that she's eligible for from you. So now it's just a matter of, should she apply for her own Social Security benefit now, get it started now, and get it covering the Medicare, and that way she can get her, but she has 40 credits in, right? She has a Social Security benefit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she used to work for me, so I used to pay her Social Security.
But she has the 40 credits. She is eligible to sign up for Medicare. So when you lose your current coverage of health care through your group coverage at work, she will be able to sign up for Medicare, you will be able to sign up for Medicare, and she's signing up under her own benefit, not yours, because she can. And she's not going to get a spousal benefit from you. So the question is, the second issue is, does she sign up for her own Social Security benefit now, or does she wait until a later date to sign up for her own Social Security benefit? And that has to do with how long she may or may not live.
Well, she comes from a family that long livers, but she'll probably live into her 90s.
And how much is her projected Social Security benefit? Is it very, very small?
It's pretty small. It's around $600.
Okay. Well, with $600, this is going to sound strange, the widow's benefit that she will get from you is about $800. And so she might as well take her benefit now, and if unfortunately you leave the earth too soon, she'll get a little bit of a bump on her Social Security to bring her up to about $800 a month. Because the windfall elimination is only going to wipe out about $1,400 or so of your benefit. It wipes out the entire spousal benefit, because the spousal benefit's only $1,200. $1,400 is higher. So
I was under the understanding that, let's say I passed away, that she would get survivor's benefit.
She would. She will get a survivor benefit equal to what you are receiving, reduced by an amount equal to two-thirds of her pension. Two-thirds of her pension is $1,433. So the first, but you're getting $2,200. So she'll get about 800-ish, you know, just shy of $800 as a widow's benefit. She's only getting 600 of her own. And if she waits until age 70, her 600 will go up to a little bit over 800, but she gives up a benefit for 4 years. I'd take her benefit now.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And I guess her school district, when they quit taking Social Security Medicare they kept taking, but Social Security really didn't do them any good.
Well, what happens with the teachers, and that there's 11, 12, 13 states across the U.S. where teachers do not pay into the Social Security system, but their pensions are a little bit better than they otherwise would be. They have better pensions to make up for the fact that they're not paying into Social Security. And I know that no teacher's going to believe my argument there because they get their pension regardless, right? But she has the pension. She has the $2,200 a month, or $2,200 a month pension instead of the Social Security.
Yeah. All righty. Well, that answers my question. I did tell her that she probably needed to start taking her Social Security at least so she can pay for her
Medicare. Yeah, might as well.
Yeah.
And it's not going to do her any benefit to wait.
Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much for the call and for the question. Yeah, again, you're giving up payments for a certain amount of time in exchange for larger payments later on. So then it becomes a question of longevity.
Right, but her larger payment, she's going to pick that up when he passes away anyway, if he passes away before her.
Correct. So that's something else that has to be factored in. All right, George in Palm City, hang on. We'll give you the full allotment of time, as we do, to ask your question. So just a couple of moments here. I know you got a tax question, so you will be next. And anybody else who's after George, hang on. We'll try to get to everybody as best we can. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, the Brain Trust, standing by, answering your money questions. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're here till the top of the hour, so get your phone calls in. We'll try to get to an email if we have time. Now, coming up tomorrow, Professor Plum is exiting the building. He's actually exiting the state. You're headed to where? Seattle or
Tacoma,
somewhere?
Seattle, Bellingham, Birmingham, all over
that's
that
right.
place.
That's right. Spreading the financial knowledge and wealth in the Pacific Northwest. And this happens for a couple of days. So in his place, we've got a hurricane coming in. Terry Keyes joins us. Professor Plum Jr., I don't know, whatever you want to call him. But anyway, he'll be in here talking about, he's got a couple of really good areas of specialization. And one of those is annuities. And we're going to be talking about fixed annuities, not only how they work, because you need to know this, but some of the, he said, I think it was the three things to look out for. And he's got examples of people who were sold incorrectly or...
That's why they get such a bad name. Fixed annuities are not bad in and of themselves.
Exactly.
It's just that they're sold so inappropriately in many cases. And it's not the problem of the annuity. It's the problem of the person that sold it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we're going to talk about that with Terry Keyes tomorrow on this program, first hour. So stick around for that. We'll try to get to some trivia in just a moment. But I did promise George to he'd be up next. George, thanks for hanging on in Palm City, Florida. How can we help you today?
Nothing to worry about. Couple of questions. I'm collecting Social Security disability, about $2,250 a month.
Okay.
And you said something about freezing it at 66, and then collecting it fully at 70. At 70.
Yes.
Do you still collect the difference? I mean, the same amount? Will I collect the same amount after 66 until 70 if I freeze it?
No. When you suspend it, the word is suspend. You say, Social Security, do not send me a check. I want to suspend receiving my benefit. And then I'm going to restart it at a later date. And if you wait until age 70, you would start receiving roughly $3,000 a month instead of $2,250. So you give up a check for up to 4 years to get a larger check for the rest of your life. Now, it takes having a fairly long life expectancy to make that worthwhile.
Right. Okay. Second part of the question. If you're collecting Social Security disability, can they freeze any of that money, like for like a school loan or anything like that?
I think they can attach it for certain federal obligations, mostly tax issues. Student loans may be one of the few that they can attach. I'd have to go back and look at it. But it's difficult to attach a disability benefit, a Social Security benefit, for anything other than federal debts that I know of. But there are that student loan may be, if it's in your name, they may be, in the worst case scenario, be able to go after that. I'd have to do a little research on that one. I'm sorry.
No problem. All right, good enough then. Thank you very much.
Okay, George, thank you very much for the call. So his issue then is...
Well, he was hoping to somehow freeze it continue to receive it and get the benefit of an increased benefit at 70.
Yeah.
And they're not that nice.
And what he was referring to was the previous caller, I think it was one of them. It might have been
Mike in San Mateo.
Yes. Where he was taking the disability benefit and took it up to, or was going to take it up to age 66.
And then when it turned into a retirement benefit,
yes,
he was going to voluntarily suspend mm-hmm. the retirement benefit. But when you suspend, you stop receiving the benefit.
Yes, yes. We've had people actually ask us before, even when the file and suspend was used, so that other people could take a benefit off of you. The problem was you cannot suspend your benefit and then allow yourself to take a benefit
unless
from someone
you can
else.
Voluntarily suspend it between now and the end of April of this year.
Exactly. Okay.
A little phase-in period of time for the new rules that went into effect last November.
That's going to be a mess. I could just see it for the next three and a half, 4 years.
It'll be a lot simpler in May because then it's done. Either you've suspended or you haven't. And
yes, but we'll still have to ask people. Well,
for the restricted application.
Yes, yes. How old are you? When were you? Anyway, that's all right.
We ask that anyway.
We ask it anyway. That's true. Okay, 877 Planner. I got time for trivia, right? Yes. Okay. Today's trivia comes from PBGC.gov, which is the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Yep.
Which handles all of your.
They're the ones that guarantee that if the company falls on hard times, you still get your pension.
Yes, exactly. So here's what they're telling us. In 1963, when Studebaker terminated its employee pension plan, more than 4,000 auto workers lost some or all of their promised pension plan benefits.
We didn't have a PBGC back then.
No, we didn't. However, at the time, Congress passed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. It's known as ERISA. Actually, it wasn't until 1974, 11 years later. And that established the they're called Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
That's exactly why ERISA that's one of the things that
yes.
pushed Congress to create ERISA and to create the safeguards and the safeties for people to have. If you're counting on a pension, you want to make sure that just before you get out to retirement, that the company doesn't fold and you don't have a pension. That's what happened with Studebaker and some of these other pensions from years ago. You were really dependent on that company. With the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp, even if the company goes on hard times, the money is set aside in a trust, and the company cannot pull the money back except for through criminal activities. And so the government will guarantee up to a certain level. Now, that certain level is roughly $60,000 today for a 65-year-old. So if your pension is supposed to be $200,000, they're not going to guarantee the whole $200,000. And that's where a lot of airline pilots, unfortunately, got really hurt a couple of years back when their pensions were a lot higher than the PBGC limits. And the airlines threw the pensions over there and said, we're done with it, we're getting rid of it, you guys deal with it. They only guaranteed it up to a certain level. But most people's pensions aren't that large. And so it is a great safety. Now, where does the money come from? Every defined benefit pension plan out there has to pay a premium, an insurance premium, to the PBGC every year. It's a cost of doing business to have a pension plan at your corporation. So they pay into the system. Now, any shortfalls from the premiums comes from the general funds.
Yeah, the general funds just come out of thin air. So really, I think what it does is it gives companies a little bit of skin in the game.
They still have to fund it.
Well, no, I understand that, but they've got to. The problem came as people were debating this a long time ago. What's going to, if we're guaranteeing a certain amount of a pension, what's going to stop companies from just going ahead and just, taking the money and running or doing something with the money and saying to heck with it because it's insured?
Well, ERISA requires the money to be in a certain area,
yes.
It requires safeguards against the company taking the money back.
Exactly, and it's hard to believe that as recently as 1963 we didn't have that, but that's what we had.
Recently?
Was it that long ago?
That was a while ago.
That was over 50 years ago. If you need the Brain Trust, we're out of time, but you can talk to any of the Brain Trust advisors, including Professor Plum, off the air at Lucia Capital Group. Their phone number, 800-644-1150. We're out of time. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.